lingered for a moment and then turned and joined the others at the gate, a black wooded portal bound with silver and gold. He stared at Chartilian for some time, and then pushed past to thrust it open.
More lives are being lost on the world below. Let us take the Oracle and leave this cursed place.
The Oracle chamber was dark, lit only by pale blue flames from braziers set on rows of slender columns. Steps led down from the doorway to the long procession of pillars. Rectangular pools of black liquid reflected the light, casting strange, long shadows. A sermon led the way. He passed between the columns, his gaze roving from left to right as he advanced with sword and vambraces ready. The dire avengers and seers followed close behind in silence. At the end of the chamber was a raised dais, which the floor sloped up to meet at the middle. To either side of the ramp were mirror-like pools that reflected the reliefs of stars and moons and comets carved into the ceiling. On the dais sat a female figure on a plain wooden stool. She was dressed in a simple gown of lavender, her golden hair tied in a tress that hung over one shoulder. Her face was exquisitely beautiful, and when she turned her gaze upon a sermon, her eyes were like sapphires. Chartilian bustled past the Phoenix Lord and bowed her head, sweeping her wand out to one side.
You are the Oracle?
The figure smiled and nodded.
That is what many have called me. You have reached the heart of the land of past futures. I sense that there has been woe in reaching me. For which I apologize. My gifts are not for those of faint heart or devious purpose.
We hail from Ulfwe, a craft world, a giant starship that fled the destruction.
I know from whence you came, Chartilian of Ulfwe. Am I not an oracle?
The seer laughed as the oracle stood up. The enigmatic female gestured for them to approach.
Please, let us not speak like ruler and ruled, but as equals.
Chartilian hurried up the ramp, while the others followed more cautiously.
I have questions. Many, many questions. We need your guidance, Oracle. Now, more than ever.
Be at peace, Chartilian. Ask what you must ask. I cannot say that all of my answers will be a joy to learn. There will be strife and death. Winding is the course you must chart. But if you follow my wisdom, there need be no more pain for your people. Ulfwe will grow strong and survive when others fall.
Blessed are we for such a gift.
The Oracle held out a slender hand, the fingernails dark and glistening like the pools of the hall.
I am the lamp to follow into dark places. Come with me, and we shall see the future unfurled before us.
A sermon stepped between the Oracle and Chartilian before the seer could grasp the proffered hand.
You know our names, but we do not know yours. Tell us your name, Oracle of Hyranothela.
The Oracle narrowed her eyes with displeasure.
I am simply the Oracle.
But you must have had a name. Names are important to our people. We came expecting a device, some technology of the old Empire. Here we find a maiden, obviously immortal. Who were you before you became the Oracle? Or are you something other than you appear? What are you?
I have always been the Oracle.
She turned to Chartilian, her expression disdainful.
Are these really the questions you seek answers for? I will not bandy petty words with the unworthy.
Chartilian asserted herself again, holding up a placating hand.
My profuse apologies, Oracle. My companion is a warrior, and that makes him crass.
She shook her head in admonishment of the Phoenix Lord.
We have given lives to come to this place, and now you threaten all that we have sought.
And such sweet words to welcome us. How can we be sure this is what we seek, and not another of your tests?
The Oracle intervened, her smile returning.
Your concerns are unnecessary. The last of the trials is over, and you proved your peaceful intent. Come, Chartilion. Let us learn of what fate plans for you.
The Farseer continued to stare at Asurman.
If this was a trap, why would our journey here have been so difficult, so dangerous? Surely whomever set the trap would want as many victims as possible to fall foul.
Asurman had no reply for this, but Eldrad spoke up. He looked at the Oracle with his head cocked to one side.
Obstacles, yes. Diversions. But from the moment we crossed the bridge, from the time we committed ourselves, we have been given no chance to turn back. Our choices were to press on and succeed, or to fall by the way. Never an opportunity to withdraw, to abandon the quest.
The Oracle's demeanor changed again.
Your doubts demean you.
She stepped to one side and waved a hand. A vision shimmered into being behind her, showing the city from which they had come. Eldar warriors fought through the streets against a ragtag army of humans. The thuggish interlopers on the ancient domains of Asurman's people were cadavers, stunted things, dressed in heavy coats and wearing ungainly breather masks. They wielded an array of primitive, solid shock weapons that made lots of noise to little effect. The conjuration settled on the ground, its edges glowing and hardening as it became a portal.
If you wish to rejoin your kin without learning the truth, you are free to go.
Chartilian grasped the hand of the Oracle, imploringly.
We will go nowhere. Tell us what we must know. What destiny awaits me and my craft world? Tell me what we must do.
The Oracle laid a caressing hand on the seer's arm, running fingers over the smooth cloth. Her smile was beautiful, but Asurman also felt a wave of satisfaction from her. More than that, he sensed triumph.
No!
Taking a stride, the Phoenix Lord speared the tip of his dire sword into the Oracle's chest. The Oracle staggered back, but rather than blood, the wound in her breast burst with pale yellow light. She fell to one knee, head bowed. The figure started to transform, her skin turning darker from white to purple. Her limbs and body stretched, taut muscles forming under the unnatural skin. Another pair of arms sprouted from rippling shoulders as hands turned into slender, crab-like claws. She looked up, her eyes becoming literal jewels. Asurman and Chartilian reflected in their many facets. The Oracle's jaw elongated as she stood, her face taking on a bovine appearance. The lavender robe, crystallizing, became a cuirass and kilt of shimmering scale armor. From her arms extruded a pair of scimitars and two spears made of black metal that reflected no light. Her true form revealed, the Oracle threw back her head and let out a chilling laugh. No Eldar, but a greater demon of She Who Thirsts, a keeper of secrets. A spear tip lanced out, smashing through the ghost helm of Chartilian. The dark blade erupting from the back of the seer's head in a spray of shards and blood.
Such a pretty bauble of a story to hang before your desperate gaze and grasping hands. Always you come. More will follow, lured by promise, slain in despair. Hope and desires turned to such bitter tears at the end. I will slay your mortal bodies and feast upon your immortal spirits. The nectar that tastes the sweetest is that which is most bitter for you.
Asurman ducked beneath a shrieking scimitar blade and raised his sword to block another as it descended toward Eldrad. The dire Avengers sprang forward, their shuriken catapults spitting a hail of fire across the face and chest of the greater demon. A clawed foot lashed out, eviscerating one of the shrine warriors, pieces of armor and innards splashing into one of the pools beside the ramp. The other was swept into the air with a spear through the throat, limbs twitching like a mad puppet. Asuman's vambraces fired constantly as he dodged and wove around the slicing blades and thrusting spears of his foe. He rolled to avoid a downward-cutting sword, almost falling off the edge of the dais. Unbalanced, he could only bring up his own blade in a hasty parry of the spear thrust that followed. Eldrad was at his side in the next moment, the seer's witchblade coruscating with purple energy as he thrust it into the gut of the demon. Psychic power exploded along the weapon as white lightning, and the enchanted crystalline blade exploded, hurling Farseer and demon apart. Smoke trailed from the bladeless hilt as Eldrad tumbled back down the ramp. Asuman wasted not a moment as he leapt to the attack, taking up his sword in both hands to swing it at the neck of the demon. The blade cut deep, slashing into semi-corporeal flesh. Yanking the sword free, he spun on his heel and delivered a backhand blow to the other side of the creature's neck, severing its head with the second blow. The Keeper of Secrets' corpse collapsed into multicolored shards of crystal, which scythed into Asuman like daggers. His armor withstood the impact, its surface cut and pierced, but not broken. He hurried to Eldrad and was relieved to find the seer still lived. He offered a hand and helped him to his feet.
What made you suspect that all was not as it seemed?
Nothing in this place is. All was illusion to entrance and entrap. There are no easy answers, no means to avoid fate's cruel attentions. Any solution that claims otherwise cannot be trusted.
So, where does that leave our people? If the Oracle is not the lamplight we must follow, where will we go?
Asuman laid a hand on the seer's shoulder. His thoughts turned to the exarch Dol'Kyriath, wandering alone in the halls of the Orbital Palace, to the lives ended, and the Eldar race diminished a little more with each of them that passed. There would be many more lost spirits in the journeys and battles ahead.
Hope comes from within, not without. There is no light to show the way, but that which some of us carry within us. Be a lantern, not a shadow, Eldrad. Those of us that can must walk the darker path, so that others may follow.
The Claw of Mork by Guy Haley. Performed by Ben Allen, Jonathan Keeble, Chris Milnes, and Peter Noble. In a tall, tall dome made of rough iron plates, a compact fusion reactor burned. Shielded and kept in place by arcane force fields as it was, it probably wasn't a good idea to stand right next to it, like Ugrim and Snikgob of the Red Sun's mechs were. They had built it, so they should have known better. Orc technology was temperamental at the best of times. They had a visitor, another big mech, having what he called an inspection, but which was just snooping as far as Ugrim saw it. Big Mech Dagog, shock attack expert, instigator of the infamous Snotling Brain, and good buddy of Mogrok. Mogrok the Great. Mogrok the Cunning. Mogrok, new chief of the Red War. A very nasty orc, and no mistake. Mogrok wasn't there, which was good. But Dagog was, and Dagog had recently become a thorn in Ugrim's side. A big, ugly orc. The ruddy light of the little sun cast his face so deep into shadow that he seemed more carved than alive. His dark, red, squig hair crest seemed blacker than night in the orange light.
Impressive. Very impressive. Shows a lot of know-what's this. A little sun, as big as a squig off, hot as you like. Very smart and no mistake.
Thanks.
No need to be like that about it. No need at all.
If there was a prize for wounded innocence, Dagog would have won it. Ugrim gritted his teeth so hard, one of them cracked.
Don't poke that.
No, be all right. It'll hold. Nice bubble. You'd never know there's a little sun on the other side of that, would you? Should bake us all alive, eh? Eh? Mogrok do it for you, then?
No. Bozget did.
Who?
The other one. The other one of us.
Ah. Yeah, that scrawny little one, eh? Looks like a very big grot.
Dagog was enjoying Ugrim's discomfort immensely. He wiped sweat from his long green face.
I should have guessed he did it and not Mogrok. It is hot in here. Wouldn't be so hot if Mogrok had done the bubble for you, eh? Would it now? Mogrok's the expert after all, eh? Eh? No sense of humor, your lot. That's your problem. Still, it's a good job. I'll be the first to admit, when Mogrok said he was asking you to set up the primary power plant for the Claw of Mork, I wasn't convinced. That Ugrim does stompers well nice, says I. And I hear all about that little sun they've got in there making it all go. But, says I, can he do it again? And bigger? Tractor cannon like the Claw of Mork needs a lot of juice.
He punctuated each word with a jab of his finger in Ugrim's chest.
A lot of power to pull down a comet. But here it is. I gotta hand it to you. Mogrok was right. Of course he's always right. But that's not the point. He's the boss of the war now, after what happened to Grok. I suppose that's the real point, ain't it?
He hawked up a glob of phlegm and spat it onto the hot plating of the floor, where it fizzled.
Poor Grok. A real orc's orc. Shame that.
Yeah.
Grok Faceeater had been killed not long after Mogrok had recruited them to build the sun. What Ugrim didn't say was that a lot of orcs had a lot of accidents around Mogrok. It didn't pay to mention it, or to think about it too much, come to that.
You know that Mogrok's my mate, right? We go way back.
I'll remember that.
You better. I'm watching you, Ugrim. Right. Gotta go. This camp don't run itself, and I've got some grots to go kick.
He sauntered over to the door, his stumpy legs giving him an exaggerated swagger, even for an orc. He stopped by the reactor's door, a heavy thing shut with a lock wheel.
Why are you all the way out here anyhow?
Health and safety.
That what you tell Mogrok, is it? Don't want a bunch of sneaky gits stealing your secrets, more like.
He shook his head, as if having a big joke that Ugrim wasn't in on, and let himself out.
Sogga, what's he know about little sons? All he's interested in is stuffing snotlings into holes. He's not right in the head.
Ain't that the truth?
I'd like to fire him out of his own shock attack gun. There's no end of them. Mogrok, him, Grimguts.
Don't hit it with your spanner.
Deal with Grimguts, there's Mogrok. Make a deal with Mogrok, there's Dagog hanging around like a bad smell. Where's it stop? With Rockstitch. Gut smash, Festork. With that weird midget of Mogrok's.
Midget Mogrok?
That's the one.
A lot of big mechs in this war. That's the truth.
And everyone a git.
What'd you do that for? You've lost your favourite spanner now.
I'm not happy, Snix.
All right. Don't let it get to your Uggs. We can kill them all later. Come on, let's go out for a smoke.
Yeah, all right. Where's Bozgat?
I don't know. Does it matter?
As if he'd heard, the crazy yatter of Bozgat's mad boy talker echoed down from somewhere high above.
Blah! Leave him! Let's go!
The mechs emerged at the top of an earth embankment, mounded up around the reactor shell. From there, they could see all the way over the grassy plain to the main camp. A messy sprawl of tents, shacks, wrecks, scrap piles, drops, rump pens, and, further out, mech boy compounds like their own. All lit up with orange campfires and buzzing floodlamps. At the center, hulked a beached rust ship, the Bad Gob. The faint glimmer of a force field, one of Mogrok's specials, covered it all over like a giant umbrella, tinging the stars green. The Bad Gob was in a sorry state. Its cannibalized hull was full of holes and the entire stern was missing. Mogrok had cut it up for his secret weapon, the mighty tractor cannon he called the Claw of Mork. There it was at the prow, pointing skyward, as tall as only the most pompous Bad Moon's creation could be. Its thick stream of green energy pierced the force dome at the top, stretching out into beyond the atmosphere, where it was about its job. Namely, dragging down a comet from space to drop on a bunch of humies. Despite the energy barrier protecting the camp, the air brought the smell of distant battle to the orc mechs, mixed with the sulphurous stink of Alaric's seas. They breathed it in deeply, noses twitching in appreciation.
Get a good view from here. Good look at the energy beam coming off the claw. Say what you like about Mogrok.
He's a git. A verminous, lice-ridden git.
That he is. But he knows his stuff. Look up there. There's that comet thing. Be here soon, then blam! Loads of dead humies.
Yeah. And it's us what's giving it the juice.
Snick Gob nodded proudly at the thick black cabling snaking through the grass from their reactor toward the Bad Gob. He produced a smoke from his grubby trousers and jammed it between his fangs.
I don't like that, Mogrok, but it's been good, this job. Been feeling a bit slow lately on the meching front. A bit stale.
Oh.
He stretched out, lifting his long, wiry arms high over his head.
And Mogrok won't kill us.
You know, I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. Are you sure you are okay, Snick Gob? You have been suspiciously cheery of late. The old Snick Gob, the proper Snick Gob, was miserable all the time. Now, you're only miserable most of the time.
Well, I don't know, Uggs. I'm just feeling upbeat, you know? This is a good fight, you've got to admit. Big, yumi walkers, loads of pinkies to squish. Good eating on them too, well fed this lot. And then there's that claw. Come on, there's some real know-whats there. It's impressive.
Suppose...
Maybe I'm just getting old. Maybe it's giving me a new perspective on things. Like, them stars is nice to look at.
You what? Stars? You is going soft. You...
What? Don't you tell me you got no time for a quiet moment. It's when I do me best thinking that. Looking up at the sky, losing myself in the lights, dreaming about going someplace else and bashing it up real good.
Not right, I says.
Suit yourself.
To Ugrim's relief, Snick Gob's face settled into its normal sour expression. Jaw jutting forward, lip curled. He plucked out a match from behind his ear and lit his smoke. Foul-smelling blue fumes wreathed his piggy face, completing the familiar image. Ugrim relaxed a bit. Meanwhile, Ugrim's boss, Grot Frick, had taken some time out from being kicked to poke about in the soil for worms.
No luck. No luck. No worms or grubs or anything. And they is outside now. Oh, they'll be calling me back for another beating, and I still haven't had me tea. But Boss Snick Gob, he's right. Them stars is so nice and all. There's like jewels. Jewels in the sky, all afire. I wish I could go there, where there is no orcs. That would be so... Hang on a minute. Them's not stars. Boss? 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 Boss, look! Ow!
Stop plucking at me trousers, you stupid grot. It's annoying. Snicks and me. Well, we is having a quiet moment.
Sorry, boss, but...
What is it?
Them stars. Them ones Boss Snick Gob said. They is moving.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nah, it's just a trick of the light. Just stars.
Nah. Look, one just flew over, right past the secondary effulgence corona of the gravitic attraction wave.
Ugrim pointed and used the special mech talk, which even the mechs didn't really understand.
Stars don't do that, do they?
Not as a rule, no.
Humies?
Probably. They'll never get through that force field, though. Idiots.
Then... why can I hear guns, then?
Right. Guns.
Coming from the bad gob, sounds like.
Oops. There goes the force bubble.
They must have got to it somehow. No, not stars. You is right, Frick. Sorry for punching you in the face.
It's all right, boss.
That's okay. Here's another, so you don't get cheeky.
Ow! I mean... thanks, boss.
Whoa! You hear that? Look at all those bullets streaking. Now that looks like a good fight.
Looks like fun. Frick, Fire up me speedster. We is going for a little drive.
Yes, boss.
I'm gonna get my burner.
Snick Gob came jogging back a minute later, a large burner tank sloshing on his back. Ugrim's buggy was a new project, hammered together in the idle hours after they'd fixed up a little sun for Mogrok. Snick Gob thought it a beauty. A two-orc job with a cracking red paint scheme. Its oversized engine sat exposed on the chassis bed in front of the driver's seat, six exhaust pipes running along the sides. The tires were especially fat, bigger at the back than the front. Carefully made mudguards curled over them. Wicked flame detailing, lovingly painted on them, and shone up real nice by the red sun's grots. Frick hung limply in a leather harness from the boss pole at the back. A little goggled flying hat on his head, ears drooping with misery. He hated driving, especially with his boss at the wheel. Ugrim, on the other hand, was seething with impatience. He was already in the driver's seat, his own lucky goggles pulled down over his eyes.
Come on! Come on! Get in! Get in! In the back! Get in me gunner's perch! I'm in! Good, because I got an idea. Now, that wouldn't have anything to do with this being a battle and all, and there being a good chance of a certain orc having a bit of an accident, would it? Might be, Snicks. Might be.
With a lurch and the stink of burning swig oil, the buggy shot off, flying over the plain toward the bad gob at intemperate speed.
Not bad for an afternoon's work.
Don't go all freak on me.
Snick Gob leaned out of the gunner's cage to let his tongue flap in the breeze. For all the Red Sun's disavowal of bikes and buggies in favor of stompers, they were still evil sons, and all evil sons deep down liked driving fast.
They has taken out the generator. Asper's done. There must be a fight at the tower.
That's where Dagog's got all his guns!
Ugrim accelerated carelessly past the broken rear end of the bad gob, right into the heart of the camp. The place was in uproar. Orcs were running everywhere, shooting at everything that moved, and that meant mainly at each other. Ugrim swerved to avoid a wild-eyed boy brandishing a shooter, mowing down a couple of Gretchen. They bounced off the front plate, one landing on Snick Gob's face.
Get off me, face! Get off!
Watch it! Sorry!
A pair of human aircraft strafed the next camp, bringing bright destruction out of the night. They shot overhead, split, banked, and came back for another go. Tracer bullets and curses chased them there and back again, but the boys were awful shots, and the fighters buzzed overhead with impunity.
Why ain't the big guns aiming for them?
They soon saw why, when Ugrim swerved around a pile of burning debris and headed for the tower, the camp's main air defense and housing. The force field generator. It was more of a fork, wide-sided, tall and strong, if rickety in appearance, with many floors and a couple of big firing platforms at different levels up top.
They is shooting at the ground, not the sky!
What? I can't hear you!
I said they is shooting at the ground! There must be UVs in the camp!
What? Louder!
Smoke billowed from the force field generator room on the lowest floor. From the top, bright green zap lances and eerie force bubbles crisscrossed the night. Plumes of earth leapt up from the ground as cannon shells impacted.
Either everyone's gone crazy, or there's zoomies in the camp.
A gunship came right at the tower, guns spitting. There was the discharge of a gravity weapon, and the flyer was snatched out of the skies and dashed to flaming pieces on the ground.
That old up there! That was his gun!
Good! Let's go kill him!
Bright flashes were coming from the top of the tottering tower, a fierce gunfight in progress. The spindly forms of humans ran about the parapet of the lower platform, slaughtering Ross. Guns exploded, but the humies couldn't get them all. The weird whoops and buzzes of mech weapons were deafening up close. Snikgob chuckled appreciatively as one smashed a humie from the top. He fell to the ground, arms flailing, dying with a wet crunch. Ugrim slewed around the base of the tower, nearly running into a fight between some armored humies and a bunch of squealing grots. The humans were shouting in their funny talk. Snikgob let rip with his scorcher. A gout of fire whooshed past the melee, incinerating an unfortunate Gretchen.
Slow down! I can't hear a thing!
All right! I'm going around for another go! Get them on the way back! Whoops! Sorry, tipped it on the two wheels!
Boss! Oh, boss, please slow down, please!
Shut it, you! If you whittle down my back, I'll give you something real to whine about!
They whizzed alongside the tower on the far side to the fight. Boys were forming up into mobs. Nobs bellowed orders. The whole camp was roused.
I'm going in! Go steady! I'm climbing out of the cage!
Go for it!
Ugrim slowed just the tiniest amount to let Snikgob jump, which he did, landing at an angle in an impressive skid, heavy boots plowing up the ground.
Right. Burn her to cutting flame. Time to teach that Dagonk a bit of a lesson. I'll chop him up good.
Snikgob set off for the tower entrance just as the top exploded with unfeasible volume, knocking him onto his backside. Dead Gretchen, bits of orcs, smashed machines and plates of metal rained down all around him. A second later, a bunch of humies came plummeting out of the air, slowing at the very last minute to touch down softly. Now he got a good look at them. Snikgob saw that they weren't like the usual humie fighter. Not beakies, but almost as heavily armored, with thick plates stained dark with soot covering their torsos and limbs. They also didn't look as scared as the usual human either. Two of them caught sight of Snikgob. Much to his amazement, instead of running off to find their mates, they leveled their rifles at him. Snikgob rolled to one side. No mean feat with a burn attack on your back. A blast of laser energy cut into his shoulder guard, burning right through it.
You got some juice on them blasters.
As he leapt to his feet, they took aim again. But Snikgob was too quick. He barged between them, elbows swinging sharply backwards to knock one down. He squeezed his burner trigger, sending a bright blue tongue of intense flame from the nozzle, and slashed it down at the second humie, cutting right the way through its gun. The weapon fell away in two pieces, the rear part dangling from power cables attaching it to the humie's backpack. Snikgob's eyebrows went up. That wasn't a normal humie gun at all. The humie yelled something and pulled a tiny knife Snikgob wouldn't have used to peel a squig. It came at him, slashing, its flat face all scrunched up. They ducked and dodged, but the humie was quick and buried the knife to the hilt in his meaty forearm. Snikgob and the humie looked at the knife, then at each other.
Humie's pretty good, humie. Ow!
The humie lunged for the knife, tried to pull it free, but it was stuck fast. All the human did was get too close.
Persistent little fellow, ain't ya?
Snikgob headbutted the humie square on the nose. The humie went down hard, face pushed in like a squashed crate.
Orc jaw? Humie fights, no contest.
He spun round to see the other humie legging it, trying to catch up with his mates who were disappearing into the dark.
Oh, no, you don't.
He twisted the knob back to whoosh and sent a blast of yellow flame searing into the night. Snitgob never got to see if he got the Humi or not. A grim speedster burst through the cloud of fire and slewed to a halt, his buggy covered in guttering patches of burner fuel. Frick was clinging to the boss pole so hard it was like he was part of it.
Oh, man! Let's go!
Couldn't find Dagob. Chances are he's dead already.
That's what I figured! Let's go kill some Humies instead!
Ah, I've got two! Ah! What's it? I'm not strapping!
Out the zogging way!
Agrim waved his hand. Orcs and Gretchen were running pell-mell in every direction. The buggy hurtled parallel to the Humies' escape route, trying to cut them off, only for the mechs to find the Humies sprinting directly at them out of the chaos, heading towards the edge of the camp. The buggy overshot, and the Humies were gone into the confusion of smoke, fire, and darkness again. Snitgob sent out a long plume of fire after the invaders, igniting three shacks. One exploded.
That was it, Guts Booze Hut, weren't it?
Yes. Yes, boss. Yes, it was.
No, Pinky! Gives Ugrim the slip!
What's it, Uggs? Tinks!
The buggy went through the middle of the tent. Canvas enveloped the boys. The buggy bucked like a wild animal. They ran over something big that complained loudly. By the time they had chucked the tent off, it was ablaze and trailing a couple of braver grots who thought grabbing the ropes might be a quick way out of the fight. Something clicked in Frick's sharp, grotty mind. He raked at Snitgob's back. The orc grabbed him by the throat.
Oi! Don't you scratch me, you miserable little...
Don't chase them! We got to get out of here!
What? Do what?
Listen! Listen! It's like with that big floating Yumi town. The battle with Big Mouth. The Burny River battle. Remember?
What? You mean boom?
Big boom, boss. They're going to blow up the camp. And me.
Gah! You're right. Uggs, we gotta leave.
What? Run away?
No, let's stay here and get fried instead. Look, up there. A light in the sky. Yumi bomber coming in. Drive!
Agrim yanked up the handbrake, sending the buggy into a dangerous spin. He arrested it. For a moment, the buggy was still.
Wah!
Mobs of orcs were howling after the Humies. Agrim drove right at them. A bunch of surprised knobs loomed out of the dark. Agrim spun the wheel. The buggy slid sideways with the force of the turn. He wrestled with it, bringing the vehicle back under control and past the swearing boss orcs. They were through, going fast towards their own compound, while a horde of enraged orc boys went the other way. Heavy shooters clattered as a fighter came to a hovering stop. Behind the mechs, orcs died. The human commandos scrambled aboard their aircraft and escaped.
It's coming! Another Humi fighter coming in fast! Get on! Get on! He's getting closer! Get us out of here or we're all for it!
The bomber became a bright shape that cut down from the night. Four dark cylinders detached from under its wings. They fell like dropped candles before something ignited in their rears and they accelerated away. The craft pulled up, poorly aimed orc fire slashing the dark as it shot skyward. It wheeled around to join the other fighter, blasting off from the edge of the camp.
Missiles! Missiles! They is going for the claw! Drive! Drive! Drive!
But this is as fast as it goes!
No, it ain't! Hang on! Squiggle injector!
Agrim reached between his legs and twisted the wheel at the top of a canister. The potent stuff inside flooded the engine, causing fire to shoot from the exhausts. The buggy leapt forward so hard, bits fell off. Snitgob was thrown painfully into the rails surrounding the gunner's cage.
he recovered to see the missiles lance into the opening containing the claw of Mork. A heartbeat passed, and the knight vanished in a massive explosion, bellying from the front of the ship. Secondary detonations ripped all along the hull, blasting out plating and sending bursts of flame shooting at the stars. If the explosion at the tower had been entertaining, this was a real jaw-dropper. Giant sheets of hull plate hailed down all over the grassland, setting the plane ablaze. Some bits went far enough to crash down among the Ork mech satellite caps. The claw of Mork twisted ponderously to one side. Its bright green beams sliced down through the night, cutting out in a spectacular shower of sparks. Giant arcs of electricity earthed themselves in the metallic rubbish littering the plain, as the claw toppled like a felled tree, crashing to ruin amid the fire. More explosions, many tinged odd colors, leapt up as one highly dangerous invention or another detonated. If a piece hit the Red Sun's reactor, it would have been good night for every orc within 3 kilometers. In saner moments, Ogrim and Snikgob might have been a mite worried about that. But right then, they were past caring. The grassland was stained as orange as the evil sun itself, revealing the speed-crazed faces of Snikgob and Ogrim. They drooled freely, their pupils, barely visible at the best of times in the red of their eyes, were vanishingly small pinpricks. Ogrim gripped his steering wheel so hard he bent it. Snikgob grabbed hold of the boss pole above Frick's head and beat his chest with his free hand. The super-refined squig oil in the injector ran dry. The engine coughed, belching smoke from its exhausts, and settled back to its normal, uneven rhythm. Things, most of them on fire, still hurtled out of the sky.
Now that is what I am talking about, eh? What a fight! Do you see why I might not be the usual self? Hey, Uggs? Uggs!
Fast!
But, look! Slow down!
Frick got no response, so bent low and pinched Snikgob's arm. He dodged Snikgob's answering punch and pointed out an entire orc lying surrounded by bits of dead ones. He was supporting himself on his elbows and looking back at the conflagration.
Dagog! That's Dagog, ain't it? I'd recognize that squid crest anywhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. Ogrim! Ogrim! Hey! Hey! I'm gonna have to punch you, aren't I?
You what? What you do that for?
Dagog! It's Dagog!
The thought of seeing so prominent a rival shamed snapped Ogrim out of his speed fugue. He zeroed in on the orc and brought the buggy to a puttering halt. He patted the injection tank.
That'll do, Squig. Well, hello, Dagog. How you doing?
We was just on our way to see you.
Dagog stared at the burning ship. His tough green hide was peppered with shrapnel, badly burned in the places it wasn't charred. All his clothes had gone, blown off by the blast. Smoke rose from the top of his scorched squig. Much of the parasitic creature's hair had been burned away, leaving the small head exposed. Tiny eyes blinked in surprise by Dagog's scalp.
Oh, dear me. What a sorry sight.
Do you know something, mate?
Dagog looked up at them, eyes wide and jaw slack. His eyes flicked between the inferno that was lately the bad gob and the smirking red suns.
I don't reckon Mogrok's going to be very happy with you. Do you, Snick Gob?
Nah, boss.
And that's not a nice place to be, is it, Snicks?
Definitely not, Nawags.
So, I would kill you for being such a git, but you know what? You got far bigger problems than being dead. See you around, Dagog. Say hello to Mogrok for me.
Am I glad that is over?
Shut up, Rick.
Oh. Oi! Don't you hit my grot! That's my job hitting that grot! Pass him here!
Here you are, Rugs.
Oh! See ya! You know, Snicks, that you got a knife in your arm. Have I?
Oh, yeah. So I am.
Devil by C.L. Werner. Performed by Joe Absalom, Gareth Armstrong, Michael Fenner, and Luke Thompson. Directed by Samuel Gunn. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. The crump of artillery, the shriek of rockets, and the murderous rattle of heavy stub guns melded into a single thunder of violence as the enemy assaulted opposition. The treads and tires of the advancing orcs ripped at the dunes as they howled across the desert. Against the onslaught of the orcs, the 400 men of the 267th Cadian Infantry Regiment retaliated with everything we had. Crack missiles slammed into the carriages of vicious war tracks, tossing them through the air in burning twists of wreckage. Plasma guns blazed into the ugly hulls of battle wagons, slicing through the crude armor plating to vaporize the mobs of brutish aliens packed onto their decks. The sharp snap of las guns rang from every corner of our position as we tried to blunt the rush of alien infantry swarming behind their vulgar machines. Then, from the left flank, what I had dreaded most came to pass.
They're through! They're out of the sand!
The cries echoed across the regimental box. The howls and roars of the orcs as they came lunging up onto the plateau added a still more bestial and savage tonality to the violence.
Fall back to the bunkers!
A dark pall had spread across the battlefield, an atmospheric blemish that seemed to spread with cancerous rapacity. I knew that phenomenon, as did every man in my command. The cry went up.
Cinderfall!
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 Men began to race for their bunkers, seeking the protection of those thick titanium walls against the malignant desert storm that was about to engulf the plateau. The rear guard held their ground, appreciating that they were dooming themselves to inescapable death, but refusing to risk the lives of their comrades by disengaging from the advancing orcs.
Captain Draken, you need to get to the bunker.
Sergeant Vane, my adjutant, spoke as I lingered to watch the rear guard defend their line. Firmly, Vane turned me about and hurried me to the bunker.
Sir, the Cinderfall is liable to hit us any second.
Corporal Huller, my Vox specialist, gave his report as I dashed inside. Vane dragged the heavy door shut with the help of two guardsmen. As the portal slammed into place, it sent a dull boom through the bunker. I couldn't shake the eerie sensation of being walled up inside my own tomb.
These walls will resist the storm.
The Adeptus Mechanicus has tested these alloys against just such conditions.
Outside, the sounds of guns and artillery were becoming muted, drowned out by the loud elemental roar of a storm. Faintly, the howls of orcs could still be heard. After a moment, the alien voices rose in grunts of pain and terror. The Cinderfall had struck in earnest now, and the Greenskins were discovering that their greatest obstacle in conquering the planet Sanzu wasn't the Imperial Guard, but the ghastliness of the world itself.
The storm will finish them.
Vane looked anxiously at the walls of the bunker as Huller spoke, listening to the raging tempest outside.
Let's just pray it doesn't finish us too.
It was two solar cycles before the toxicity levels outside the bunker were reduced enough that we could dig ourselves out. The heavy titanium roof hatch was our only means of egress. The shifting sand had all but entombed the rest of the bunker. Sergeant Vane wrenched the portal open by force, and I followed him up into the orange glow of Sanzu's daylight. Axis Vane was a burly, grox-necked brute of a man, a veteran with more than 30 years in the 267th. The claw of some Tyranid beast on Iolus 9 had torn away most of his right shoulder, and the augmetic replacement sometimes pained him if he put too much strain upon it. I was quite indebted to Vane. The claw that had ripped his shoulder could just as easily have taken my head. The sight that greeted our eyes was as bleak and desolate as anything I'd ever seen. The long line of bunkers and tank emplacements was virtually obliterated, buried beneath tons of sand and dust. Here and there a roof hatch disturbed the dunes. Otherwise, there was no trace of our fortifications. Of the orcs and their titanic armada of beasts and machines, only the corroded bulks of a few of their biggest constructions remained, reduced to little more than shapeless mounds of pitted metal by the Cinderfall's caustic wind. On Sanzu, a world scarred by centuries of mineral exploration, its soil diseased and polluted by industrial runoff, the deserts of the Blight were especially feared. Great storms periodically raged across the trackless waste, composed not of dirt and sand, but toxic grains of pollution. Centuries of these storms had obliterated entire hive cities. Only a few hours had served to wipe out nearly every sign of the battle that had been fought here.
Sanzu's biggest graveyard.
Vane scowled across the sand dunes that now covered the entire plateau.
The orcs didn't get past this point. The dead can rest, knowing their sacrifice wasn't futile. It's by the grace of the Emperor that the Cinderfall came when it did.
I turned to the soldiers climbing out from the cramped confinement below to join us on the roof. My gaze settled on the Vox operator.
Corporal Huller, have you been able to raise anybody?
There's been no response to my hails. The metallic sediment stirred up by the Cinderfall will make it hard to transmit any distance.
Get back below and keep trying, Corporal. I want to know if we still have men out there.
Vane waved his hand at the nearest bunker.
If we do, they aren't in there, sir. Look at the sand spilling down into that hole. When these storms hit, the dust settles into the low spots. Any bunker the orcs manage to crack open won't have anything inside that's still alive.
Guardsman Weir!
I called to the trooper who had been entrusted with stewardship of the regimental maps. The soldier hurried forward and handed the sealed canister to me. Unscrewing the top, I removed each map and made a careful study of them. I could feel the eyes of my men on me, expectant, wondering if it was hope or doom that was written on those documents. I raised my voice so that all of my men could hear me.
We can't stay here.
I gestured to the almost buried roof upon which we stood.
One more storm, and we'll be buried so deep a Titan couldn't dig us out. Without reliable communication to headquarters, waiting here to be lifted out isn't an option either.
What are your orders, Captain?
We do what the men of the Imperial Guard have done since the God Emperor walked among mortals. We march. If we strike out to the east, we should come upon a mineral outpost within 8 solar cycles. I want this fortification stripped of ration packs, water flasks, and as much man-portable ordnance as we can carry.